The Return of the King. Cassette 10.
Sam had been looking the sheriffs up and down, and had spotted one that he knew. "Hey, come here, Robin Smallborough," he called. "I want a word with you." With a sheepish glance at his leader, who looked wrathful but did not dare to interfere, Sheriff Smallborough fell back and walked beside Sam, who got down off his pony. "Look here, Cock Robin," said Sam. "You're hobbit and bred, and ought to have more sense, coming a waylaying Mr. Frodo and all. And what's all this about the inn being closed?"
"They're all closed," said Robin. "The chief doesn't hold with beer. Leastways, that is how it started. But now I reckon it's his men that has it all. And he doesn't hold with folk moving about. So if they will or they must, then they has to go to the sheriff house and explain their business."
"You ought to be ashamed of yourself having anything to do with such nonsense," said Sam. "You used to like the inside of an inn better than the outside yourself. You were always popping in, on duty or off."
"And so I would be still, Sam, if I could. But don't be hard on me. What can I do? You know how I went for a sheriff 7 years ago, before any of this began. Give me a chance of walking round the country and seeing folk and hearing the news and knowing where the good beer was. But now it's different."
"But you can give it up. Stop sheriffing, if it has stopped being a respectable job," said Sam.
"We're not allowed to," said Robin.
"If I hear 'not allowed' much oftener," said Sam, "I'm going to get angry."
"Can't see as I'd be sorry to see it," said Robin, lowering his voice. "If we all got angry together, something might be done. But it's these men, Sam, the chief's men. He sends them round everywhere, and if any of us small folk stand up for our rights, they drag him off to the lockholds. They took old Flour Dumpling, old Will Whitfoot the mayor, first, and they've taken a lot more. Lately it's been getting worse. Often they beat him now."
"Then why do you do their work for them?" said Sam angrily. "Who sent you to Frogmorton?"
"No one did. We stay here in the big sheriff house. We're the first East Farthing troop now. There's hundreds of sheriffs all told, and they want more with all these new rules. Most of them are in it against their will, but not all. Even in the shire there is some as like minding other folks' business and talking big. And there's worse than that. There's a few as do spy work for the chief and his men."
"Ah, so that's how you had news of us, is it?"
"That's right. We aren't allowed to send by it now, but they use the old quick post service and keep special runners at different points. One came from Whitfurrow's last night with a secret message, and another took it on from here. And a message came back this afternoon saying you was to be arrested and taken by Bywater, not direct to the lockholes. The chief wants to see you at once, evidently."
"He won't be so eager when Mr. Frodo's finished with him," said Sam. The sheriff house at Frogmorton was as bad as the bridge house. It had only one story, but it had the same narrow windows, and it was built of ugly pale bricks, badly laid. Inside it was damp and cheerless, and supper was served on a long, bare table that had not been scrubbed for weeks. The food deserved no better setting. The travellers were glad to leave the place. It was about 18 miles to Bywater, and they set off at 10 o'clock in the morning. They would have started earlier, only the delay so plainly annoyed the sheriff leader. The west wind had shifted northward, and it was turning colder, but the rain was gone. It was rather a comic cavalcade that left the village, though the few folk that came out to stare at the get-up of the travellers did not seem quite sure whether laughing was allowed. A dozen sheriffs had been told off as escort to the prisoners, but Merry made them march in front, while Frodo and his friends rode behind. Merry, Pippin and Sam sat at their ease laughing and talking and singing, while the sheriff stumped along trying to look stern and important. Frodo, however, was silent and looked rather sad and thoughtful. The last person they passed was a sturdy old gaffer clipping a hedge. "Hello, hello," he jeered. "Now who's arrested who?" Two of the sheriffs immediately left the party and went towards him. "Leader," said Mary, "order your fellows back to their places at once if you don't want me to deal with them." The two hobbits, at a sharp word from the leader, came back sulkily. "Now get on," said Mary. And after that the travellers saw to it that their ponies' pace was quick enough to push the sheriffs along as fast as they could. The sun came out, and in spite of the chilly wind, they were soon puffing and sweating. At the 3-farthing stone they gave it up. They'd done nearly 14 miles with only one rest at noon. It was now 3 o'clock. They were hungry and very footsore, and they could not stand the pace. "Well, come along in your own time," said Mary. "We're going on." "Goodbye, Cock Robin," said Sam. "I'll wait for you outside the Green Dragon, if you haven't forgotten where that is. Don't dawdle on the way." "You're breaking a rest, that's what you're doing," said the leader ruefully, "and I can't be answerable." "We shall break a good many things yet, and not ask you to answer," said Pippin. "Good luck to you." The travellers trotted on, and as the sun began to sink towards the white downs far away on the western horizon, they came to Bywater by its wide pool. And there they had their first really painful shock. This was Frodo and Sam's own country, and they found out now that they cared about it more than any other place in the world. Many of the houses that they had known were missing. Some seemed to have been burned down. The pleasant row of old hobbit holes in the bank on the north side of the pool were deserted, and their little gardens that used to run down bright to the water's edge were rank with weeds. Worse, there was a whole line of the ugly new houses all along poolside, where the hobbit and road ran close to the bank. An avenue of trees had stood there. They were all gone. And looking with dismay up the road towards Bag End, they saw a tall chimney of brick in the distance. It was pouring out black smoke into the evening air. Sam was beside himself. "I'm going right on, Mr. Frodo," he cried. "I'm going to see what's up. I want to find my gaffer." "We ought to find out first what we're in for, Sam," said Mary. "I guess that the chief will have a gang of ruffians handy. We'd better find someone who'll tell us how things are around there." But in the village of Bywater, all the houses and holes were shut, and no one greeted them. They wondered at this, but they soon discovered the reason of it. When they reached the Green Dragon, the last house on the Hobbiton side, now lifeless and with broken windows, they were disturbed to see 6 large, ill-favoured men lounging against the inn wall. They were squint-eyed and sallow-faced. "Like that friend of Bill Fernie's at Bree," said Sam. "Like many that I saw at Isengard," muttered Mary. The ruffians had clubs in their hands and horns by their belts, but they had no other weapons, as far as could be seen. As the travellers rode up, they left the wall and walked into the road, blocking the way.
"Where do you think you're going?" said one, the largest and most evil-looking of the crew. "There's no road for you any further. And where are those precious sheriffs?"
"Coming along nicely," said Mary. "A little footsore, perhaps. We promised to wait for them here."
"Gone. What did I say?" said the ruffian to his mates. "I told Sharkey it was no good trusting those little fools. Some of our chaps ought to have been sent."
"And what difference would that have made, pray?" said Perry. "We're not used to footpads in this country, but we know how to deal with them."
"Footpads, eh?" said the man. "So that's your tone, is it? Change it, or we'll change it for you. You little folk are getting too uppish. Don't you trust too much in the boss's kind heart? Sharkey's come now, and he'll do what Sharkey says."
"And what may that be?" said Frodo quietly.
"This country wants waking up and setting to rights," said the ruffian, "and Sharkey's going to do it, and make it hard if you drive him to it. You need a bigger boss, and you'll get one before the year is out, if there's any more trouble. Then you'll learn a thing or two, you little rat folk.
"Indeed, I'm glad to hear of your plans," said Frodo. "I'm on my way to call on Mr. Lotho, and he may be interested to hear of them, too." The ruffian laughed.
"Lotho? He knows all right. Don't you worry. He'll do what Sharky says, because if a boss gives trouble, we can change him. See? And if little folk try to push in where they're not wanted, we can put them out of mischief, see?"
"Yes, I see," said Frodo. "For one thing, I see that you're behind the times and the news here. Much has happened since you left the south. Your day is over, and all other ruffians. The Dark Tower has fallen, and there's a king in Gondor. And Isengard has been destroyed, and your precious master is a beggar in the wilderness. I passed him on the road. The king's messengers will ride up the greenway now, not bullies from Isengard." The man stared at him and smiled.
"A beggar in the wilderness?" he mocked. "Oh, is he indeed? Swagger it, my little cock-a-hoop. But that won't stop us living in this fat little country where you've lazed long enough, and—" he snapped his fingers in Frodo's face. "King's messengers? That for them. When I see one, I'll take notice, perhaps."
This was too much for Pippin. His thoughts went back to the field of Cormallen, and here was a squint-eyed rascal calling the ring-bearer Little Cock-a-Hoop. He cast back his cloak, flashed out his sword, and the silver and sable of Gondor gleamed on him as he rode forward.
"I am a messenger of the king," he said. "You're speaking to the king's friend, and one of the most renowned in all the lands of the West. You're a ruffian and a fool. Down on your knees in the road and ask pardon, or I'll set this troll's bane in you."
The sword glinted in the westering sun. Merry and Sam drew their swords also, and rode up to support Pippin. But Frodo did not move. The ruffians gave back. Scaring Breeland peasants and bullying bewildered hobbits had been their work. Fearless hobbits with bright swords and grim faces were a great surprise. And there was a note in the voices of these newcomers that they had not heard before. It chilled them with fear.
"Go," said Merry. "If you trouble this village again, you will regret it."
The three hobbits came on, and then the ruffians turned and fled, running away up the Hobbiton road, but they blew their horns as they ran.
"Well, we've come back none too soon," said Merry.
"Not a day too soon. Perhaps too late, at any rate, to save Lotho," said Frodo. "Miserable fool, but I'm sorry for him."
"Save Lotho? Whatever do you mean?" said Pippin. "Destroy him, I should say."
"I don't think you quite understand things, Pippin," said Frodo.
"Lotho never meant things to come to this pass. He's been a wicked fool, but he's caught now. The ruffians are on top, gathering, robbing and bullying, and running or ruining things as they like, in his name. And not in his name, even for much longer. He's a prisoner in Bag End now, I expect, and very frightened. We ought to try and rescue him."
"Well, I am staggered," said Pippin. "Of all the ends to our journey, this is the very last I should have thought of. To have to fight half-orcs and ruffians in the Shire itself, to rescue Lotho Pimple."
"Fight," said Frodo.
"Well, I suppose it may come to that. But remember, there's to be no slaying of hobbits, not even if they have gone over to the other side. Really gone over, I mean. Not just obeying ruffians' orders because they're frightened. No hobbit has ever killed another on purpose in the Shire, and it is not to begin now. And nobody is to be killed at all if it can be helped. Keep your tempers and hold your hands to the last possible moment."
"But if there are many of these ruffians," said Merry, "it will certainly mean fighting. You won't rescue Lotho or the Shire just by being shocked and sad, my dear Frodo."
"No," said Pippin. "It won't be so easy scaring them a second time. They were taken by surprise. You heard the horn blowing? Evidently there are other ruffians near at hand. They'll be much bolder when there's more of them together. We ought to think of taking cover somewhere for the night. After all, we're only four, even if we are armed."
"I've an idea," said Sam. "Let's go to old Tom Cotton's down South Lane. He always was a stout fellow, and he has a lot of lads that were all friends of mine."
"No," said Merry.
It's no good getting undercover. That is just what people have been doing, and just what these ruffians like. They will simply come down on us in force, corner us, and then drive us out or burn us in. No, we've got to do something at once.
Do what? Said Pippin.
Raise the shire, said Merry. Now, wake all our people. They hate all this, you can see. All of them except perhaps one or two rascals and a few fools that want to be important, but don't at all understand what is really going on. But shire folk have been so comfortable so long they don't know what to do. They just want a match, though, and they'll go up in fire. The chief's men must know that. They'll try to stamp on us and put us out quick. We've only got a very short time. Sam, you can make a dash for Cotton's farm if you like. He's the chief person round here, and the sturdiest. Come on. I'm going to blow the horn of Rowan and give them all some music they've never heard before. They rode back to the middle of the village. There Sam turned aside and galloped off down the lane that led south to Cotton's. He had not gone far when he heard a sudden clear horn call go up ringing into the sky. Far over hill and field it echoed, and so compelling was that call that Sam himself almost turned and dashed back. His pony reared and neighed. "On, lad, on!" he cried. "We'll be going back soon." Then he heard Merry change the note, and up went the horn cry of Buckland, shaking the air. "Awake! Awake! Fear! Fire! Foes! Awake! Fire! Foes! Awake!" Behind him, Sam heard a hubbub of voices and a great din and slamming of doors. In front of him, lights sprang out in the gloaming. Dogs barked, feet came running. Before he got to the lane's end, there was Farmer Cotton with three of his lads, young Tom, Jolly, and Nick, hurrying towards him. They had axes in their hands and barred the way. "Nay, it's not one of them ruffians," Sam heard the farmer say. "It's a hobbit by the size of it, but all dressed up queer. Hey," he cried. "Who are you, and what's all this to do?" "It's Sam. Sam Gamgee. I've come back." Farmer Cotton came up close and stared at him in the twilight.
"Well," he exclaimed, "the voice is right, and your face is no worse than it was, Sam. But I should have passed you in the street in that gear. You've been in foreign parts, seemingly. We feared you were dead."
"That I ain't," said Sam. "Nor Mr. Frodo. He's here and his friends. And that's the to-do. They're raising the shire. We're going to clear out these ruffians and their chief, too. We're starting now."
"Good, good," cried Farmer Cotton. "So it's begun at last. I've been itching for trouble all this year, but folks wouldn't help, and I've had the wife and Rosie to think of. These ruffians don't stick at nothing. But come on now, lads. Bywater is up. We must be in it."
"What about Mrs. Cotton and Rosie?" said Sam. "It isn't safe yet for them to be left all alone."
"My Nibs is with them, but you can go and help him if you have a mind," said Farmer Cotton with a grin. Then he and his sons ran off towards the village.
Sam hurried to the house. By the large round door at the top of the steps from the wide yard stood Mrs. Cotton and Rosie, and Nibs in front of them, grasping a hayfork.
"It's me," shouted Sam as he trotted up. "Sam Gamgee. So don't try prodding me, Nibs. Anyway, I've a mail shirt on me."
He jumped down from his pony and went up the steps. They stared at him in silence.
"Good evening, Mrs. Cotton," he said. "Hello, Rosie."
"Hello, Sam," said Rosie. "Where have you been? They said you were dead, but I've been expecting you since the spring. You haven't hurried, have you?"
"Perhaps not," said Sam abashed. "But I'm hurrying now. We're sitting about the ruffians, and I've got to get back to Mr. Frodo. But I thought I'd have a look and see how Mrs. Cotton was keeping, and you, Rosie."
"We're keeping nicely, thank you," said Mrs. Cotton. "Or should be, if it weren't for those thieving ruffians."
"Well, be off with you," said Rosie. "If you've been looking after Mr. Frodo all this while, what do you want to leave him for, as soon as things look dangerous?" This was too much for Sam. It needed a week's answer or none. He turned away and mounted his pony. But as he started off, Rosie ran down the steps. "I think you look fine, Sam," she said. "Go on now, but take care of yourself, and come straight back as soon as you've settled the ruffians."
When Sam got back, he found the whole village roused. Already, apart from many younger lads, more than 100 sturdy hobbits were assembled with axes and heavy hammers and long knives and stout staves, and a few had hunting bows. More were still coming in from outlying farms. Some of the village folk had lit a large fire, just to enliven things, and also because it was one of the things forbidden by the chief. It burned bright as night came on. Others, at Merry's orders, were setting up barriers across the road at each end of the village. When the sheriffs came up to the lower one, they were dumbfounded. But as soon as they saw how things were, most of them took off their feathers and joined in the revolt. The others slunk away. Sam found Frodo and his friends by the fire, talking to old Tom Cotton, while an admiring crowd of Bywater folk stood round and stared.
"Well, what's the next move?" said Farmer Cotton.
"I can't say," said Frodo, "until I know more. How many of these ruffians are there?"
"That's hard to tell," said Cotton. "They moves about and comes and goes.